is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Today's show is brought to you by Paul's Automotive. Paul's Automotive is located at 634 Route 46 in Kenville, New Jersey. If you want a master mechanic who has over 38 years of experience with quality work, he's your guy to call. He strives to keep you in a safe and reliable vehicle, and his goal is to make your experience as pleasurable and convenient as possible. It's not like you're dropping your car off and you're getting somebody named Joe Blow who's working on your car. Paul's the guy that'll be working on your car, and he gives you a reasonable price. We're proud to say that he's helped Autism Radio many times to keep our vehicle safe and reliable on the road. So he's your guy to give a call today at 973-584-1035. Remember, he's always committed to quality, and he's pleasurable to work with, and he is very helpful. So give him a call today at 973-584-1035. 1035 today.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org, home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at AutismDonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad and author of The Spectrum Diet, Master Chef and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction, as always. It's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. Today, I'd like to welcome back my co-host, Lynn Glukoff, back to the program.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Great, Lynn. It's great to have you back on today with me. And we have some really cool topics to talk about. The first topic today is some tips that can help parents for kids with autism on Halloween, which is, you know, it's a big thing because there's a lot of sights, a lot of smells, different textures, you know, that can do a lot of different things for these kids. So it can be a treat if it's done correctly, obviously. As we know, we have a lot of textures. There's creepy sights and lots of candy-filled scents. But, you know, as you know, children with autism, they have, you know, a lot of sensory processing issues that may kind of interpret some of this and react very differently to these, you know, type holiday activities for, you know, neurotypical kids.
That's true.
You know, they can become overwhelmed, as we know, with a wide array of sights, sounds, textures at Halloween. Because let's face it, Halloween is a very bold, loud type holiday. And, you know, but that doesn't mean that our kids need to sit out of Halloween festivities. I think it's important. And there's some tips that can help parents make a Halloween positive experience for children with sensory challenges. You know, I think parents, you know, it's like anything, like get prepared. You know, Halloween traditions sometimes will clash with established rules like taking candy from strangers, you know, to help a child understand what Halloween is and is not. I think, you know, you could probably read some stories to reflect your values ahead of time. Obviously, there's a lot of unpredictable events like an unexpected boo or someone scaring the child. Or changes in new foods that they're getting on Halloween, you know, these different candies and stuff. I think it's a good idea if the parents kind of go through a little bit of a review and like almost rehearse it through, you know, some stories, maybe even use songs or pictures that can help to really, you know, make it a little bit of better experience for your child. You know, and the other thing is costumes, you know, make sure they're safe. And they're comfortable for the child. I mean, you know, some of these costumes I know and you know, our children wouldn't wear them at all. You know, my son would be taking the mask off or the whatever, you know, he has off every 2 seconds because obviously it's disturbing his, you know, sensory of feeling enclosed.
Yeah, Michael could never wear a mask, anything with a mask or a hat or anything like that. We could never buy him.
Yeah.
So that's something to think of for these parents is probably put on an outfit that's easy on, easy off would be
absolutely. You know, I think, you know, any mask probably you don't want to recommend. Obviously, they can inhibit breathing and vision. I would also be aware of costumes with exposed tags or elastic parts, because that could be very irritating for a lot of children with autism.
Right.
You want to consider whether your child will feel maybe too warm in a costume or even too cold.
Right.
You know, and also, is your child going to wear a coat over the costume? Are you going to try makeup? It might feel very slimy on their skin and also have an odor, which they may disturb them. Also, you know, you got to be very cautious with the fabrics you choose, because it could be very scratchy, slippery, or even stiff. So you got to be careful with all those things. And I just think, like, less is more.
That's what I was going to say. Keep it simple, yeah.
You know, a child with sensory issues, you know, they may appreciate a much less more approach.
Definitely.
You know, like a cape, a short cape, may be enough for a superhero costume.
Exactly.
Or just a green shirt.
Crazy.
Could indicate a turtle or even a frog, maybe. And then, of course, the same thing goes for trick-or-treating. You know, keep it a short experience so that the kids enjoy it and don't feel overwhelmed.
Right.
I think that's really important to emphasize that. And like I said, you can practice. You can minimize the anxiety of the day by explaining to the kids how it works. Let them practice a routine. You can even practice a sequence right in front of your own house, walking up the door and saying trick or treat if they're, you know, verbal, and getting used to opening their bag and putting a treat in there. And also offer a thank you at homes, you know, of familiar neighbors. And actually, I think in a way, you know, children also, I think, should go out earlier, you know, not in the dark.
Right.
You know, try to get out there earlier and just don't make it so long. I mean, when I was a kid, we go out trick-or-treating like 5 hours, you know, which was like ridiculous. And we'd be out all night trying to get as much candy as possible. But, you know, you may want to go out for only half an hour or an hour with your child at the most. And that's good for them, you know. And you may want to also look at some of the homes, too. I know some homes, they set up a cemetery and this all, you know, scary kind of stuff and decorations and flashing lights. You may want to avoid them with your child with autism, because it might be too overwhelming for them. And also, you want to work on crossing the street and explain some of the rules about eating candy on Halloween night. You know, will they be allowed to eat while they're out trick-or-treating, or will they need to wait till they get home? And also, how much candy they, you know, you want them to eat, because let's face it, if they get a lot of candy, you don't want them eating too much candy at night, and then the sugar is just going to keep them up all night. So, you know, these are all things to think about. And also, the bottom line is, parents, you know your children. You know, and our children will seek opportunities to touch eyeballs, maybe touch a pumpkin. I know my son will probably try to eat a pumpkin.
Oh, wow.
You know, he'll enjoy touching the wet and squishy textures.
Okay.
And then, of course, some children want to keep their hands dry and might want to put, you know, stickers on a jack-o'-lantern rather than carving one. You know, and they even have kits now. I know my mother-in-law bought something for the kids that, without carving a pumpkin, they can just stick them in and make this, you know, beautiful looking pumpkin. So there is some different things, you know, out there. And then, you know, the tradition of like bobbing for apples and stuff like that, you know, you know, they may not like doing that, you know, yeah, I don't think that might be an old tradition, but people still do actually do that. And
really? Wow. Okay.
You know, so, you know, if you're doing a event for a few friends, or save it, you know, maybe for a large party in the future. And then, you, like I said, there's no place like home. And when it's time to stop the festivities, you know, look for signs of your child for sensory overload. If your child seems tired or hyper excited or crying or, you know, just doesn't look happy, you know, sometimes it's time to go home. And, you know, you make the most out of the day. But I think if you use those tips, I think it could help a parent, you know, better prepare them for trick-or-treating and going out on Halloween.
I want to speak for the nonverbal child on the severe ends. I had seen online there are little sometimes you can have like a little thing printed out, you know, I can't speak, but trick or treat or something like that. I've seen tags online, you know, like that. If you want handed to somebody and
yep.
telling them that the child can't speak, you know, my son used to just knock on the, he just actually had fun knocking on the doors. It's so funny because he never liked candy. So he would knock on the doors and just be happy to see people's faces.
Yeah.
And that was it for him. Like, it's so funny how, you know, that just made him happy. He didn't even care about the candy. The kid then never, even now, he doesn't really.
It's just the experience. I think they just enjoy the experience of being out with people. And, you know, they want to make friends, too, just like everybody else. And
yeah, so he would see somebody happy to see him, and he'd smile, and that was it, you know. And then it was funny because it was the first holiday out of all the holidays that he ever understood was Halloween, I think because we have a pumpkin farm right down from my house.
Oh, okay.
So we used to take him every year when he was very, very little. So he always understood the whole pumpkin thing. It was like a hayride. He liked that. It was fun, you know. So he kind of understood pumpkin, Halloween. I don't know. For some reason, that just seemed to click.
Yeah.
Maybe because of the symbol, you know.
Could be.
But he, it was funny. And then at one point, he really loved lollipops. So he just picked out the lollipop from each thing, and that was all he would eat. You know, from each person, but he always enjoyed it, really, to be honest with you. Now he's getting kind of old for it. He's not
right
to it, but he, when he was little, he really liked it a lot. But we, like I said, like you said, keep the costumes, you know, very simple. And he only went out for a short time. And I used to actually, if you do have a therapist, also, I used to take the therapist with me a lot with him, so that they could walk with me and help, you know, help him with the experience as well. So that was kind of helpful too when he was younger. We used to do that. So just to share some of my experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a great point you brought up about the nonverbal. I mean, that's actually something we used to do with Jonathan. We used to have a card, you know, and he would hand it to the lady or the man at the door, and you know, basically said that, you know, I'm nonverbal. I understand, but I don't speak. You know, and it was very simple, you know,
right?
And it just made it a better experience for him at the door. And a lot of times the people who'd answer the door would go out of their way to make it an extra special experience, which is awesome.
True.
So there's a lot of good people still out there that do really nice things. So
definitely.
I think they just need the opportunity to understand, you know.
I was going to say the other thing is in our town now, and I'm sure I think a lot of towns in New Jersey anyway, have like a trunk or treat where you go. I haven't taken Michael, but my daughter has gone. Might be a little bit smaller. You go from car to car instead of walking around the whole town, you know, to different houses. I don't know if your town has that, but we have that here. Also, I have a friend who goes to the mall used to go to the mall every year with her kids, because the mall has actually stores that give out candy. So that's another idea, if you don't want to keep them outside, if it's too cold or whatever. Just something to think about, you know, doing
yeah.
with your kid.
Let's hope this Halloween, at least in the tri-state area, is decent. I mean,
right. The
last couple Halloweens have been disastrous. We had a snowstorm, we had Hurricane
wow.
Sandy, and last year I think we had heavy rain or something. It was cold.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so it hasn't been good for the kids for trick or treating. That's for sure. They canceled the Halloween the one year altogether because of the Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. So.
Well, actually, the other thing is too. What I think I'm going to do. Some of you who may have older kids on the spectrum, I think what I'm going to do with Michael this year is have him stay home and help me hand out the candy to the kids who come to the door. First of all, it's a good fine motor skill for him. It's hard for him to pick up a couple of pieces of candy or whatever and just hand it out to people. If we don't really get that many trick-or-treaters,
right,
whatever.
Right.
I just thought that'd be like he'd feel like a good helper and he'd like seeing the kids or whatever. So I might do that with him this year.
Yeah, it could be great. I mean, you could even wear a costume at home. You know, you get him dressed up to answer the door a little bit. You put
a shirt
or something he could wear, you know, something simple.
Right,
you know, like I said, keep it short, sweet, and simple. That's always a motto that I've lived by in a lot of ways, but especially with these kids. But, you know, we also want to mention that, you know, we have a question of the week on the Facebook page right now that pertains to Halloween. So we do want to hear from our listeners. So go to our Autism Radio Facebook page, like our page, and also look for the question of the week that was posted by Lynn. Hopefully, you know, we'll talk about it hopefully next week on the show. We get a lot of feedback, so.
Mm-hmm.
And also, don't forget to use our toll-free number at 1-877-HOPE-777 and maybe share a personal Halloween experience if you'd like. on the show, either funny or even whatever it might be. We would love to share it with the rest of our listeners for sure. So feel free to call our toll-free number. And also, if you don't want to hear your voice but you still want to tell your story, you can email us at questions@autismradio.org. So if you have anything you'd like to add or you want to add a story to share, you know, we'll definitely try to make some time for it on the air. So, well, without further ado, I know Lynn's got a question of the week this week from our Facebook page that she's going to share with us. So take it away, Lynn.
Okay, the topic, this was a couple weeks ago, I had presented a topic that is very near and dear to me. Have you ever been told by a professional doctor that your child will not progress, will never be able to do something, and your child proved him or her wrong? We would like to share these stories on our podcast. I can tell you, Paul, the amount of people who responded was phenomenal. And we do have a Hope Saves the Day page, which I also posted there as well. I'm going to read off a girl named Maggie, who has autism, wasn't supposed to live past age 8 and would never walk. I was told for 3 years. She walked into kindergarten and is 9 and is healthy now. It turned out she had sleep apnea and enlarged tonsils, not mitochondrial disorder. This person also has autism, so I just wanted to mention that. Told by another person that her daughter Brianna will not be able to do certain things. Very heartbreaking. She said, don't listen. Take every milestone and blessing and teach them anyway. Brianna has showed them. She has severe autism, yes, but one doctor and nurse said Brianna would never be mainstream in a regular classroom. She is now mainstream in a reading, typing class in the 8th grade and has been in mainstream since 6th grade. A hospital told me my son would never speak, potty train, form any connection, or have any sort of personality beyond screaming for someone to guess what he wanted, and he wouldn't care if it were me or some random person. That was at age 5. He's 11 and speaks, uses the potty, and while not typical, is a very big part of our family. What a terrible thing to say to someone. I mean, some of these people are just... our hospital was supposed to be the place to go, and all they did was depress me for a while and blow off my other son's issues as all behavioral. I was told, now this woman has an older son, I was told that Matt would be unreachable, a robot-like person, incapable of critical thought or emotion. He told me if I took him home that I didn't understand what I would be putting the rest of my family through. They recommended institutionalizing him. He was only 2 years old, moderate severe autism, and nonverbal. Today he's still moderate severe, but just mostly nonverbal. Oh, he graduated number 4 in his class with honors, and he's now living independently for over 320 days. That is some story.
Wow. Ooh. No, that's incredible. You know, it's just amazing. You know, these doctors, they put such a negative light on autism, you know, especially years ago. And, you know, I've shared my personal story, and basically we were told, you know, there's nothing we can do. You know, medicate him to calm him down, and, you know, he's not going to have much of a life. He's not going to love. I mean, all these negative things that were told to us. And, you know, it's just, you know what makes it really horrible to me more than anything when I think back, and I feel for every parent that has to go through this, because there's no empathy there. It's right. Like they give you a diagnosis, like they're diagnosing skin cancer or they're diagnosing something, and it's like, but you don't understand, like, this is a lifelong thing. This is not a disease that is going to shorten lifespan. They're going to live a long, extended life on this earth. And we have to have the tools to deal with what we have in front of us. Uh-huh. And it's our child still that we love. And that's, I think, the main thing is that a lot of these doctors, they have no bedside manners. They don't understand it. And they just diagnose it like they're diagnosing, you know, anything. And I think I really felt like there should be a special sensitivity training for them.
Exactly.
In how they approach letting a family know that their child has autism. And I don't think anybody's done that. And I know I've brought that up several times, but I'm still hearing the same stories over and over again, Lynn. And it just drives me insane that there's nothing done. These doctors, you know, they make a lot of money. And yet nobody's teaching them bedside manners or just being a human being. You know, they're just giving you a medical code and this is what you use for services. And that's about all they tell you. You know, and it's just horrible to me, you know, telling your, I mean, you just have a new baby who's like 2-3 years old and you find out, okay, your child has autism, and they basically tell, well, he's going to probably go to an institution. I mean, how can you say that to a parent?
Right.
Seriously, it's outrageous.
Actually, it was funny because I had started this out by saying my son was, I don't know if I shared this before on the show, my child was diagnosed in 2002, and I was told by son's pediatrician that if I did not get, now this, I'm not kidding, this is literally what she said to me, if I did not get in his face and play with him, he would develop autism. Now, this is my first child, okay? Imagine my devastation. I felt like a horrible mother. My son was my first child. I thought she might be right. I was lucky that my family members and friends told me that was absolutely not the case, and it was definitely not my fault. So that is why I want to dispel this notion that our children are not capable. They are
capable. Yes, absolutely.
And this is also why, you know, I love our show, and I love the idea that hope saves the day, because you do have to believe in your child, and you do need professionals that believe in your child, you know. And I'm not going to say they're all bad. I mean, there's some that are better than others, but if you find someone who's so negative like that, you can't, you've got to move on. I mean, because they really, to this day and age, with all the information that's out there, they can't be so apathetic. You know, it's disgusting. It really is disgusting.
No, it really is.
I've had moms crying to me about what their parent, the doctors had told them. I mean, it's just so sad.
Yeah, no, I still get that now. I get emails sent to me about that same topic, and like, you know, they don't know where to turn. I'll never forget, it was about 2 years ago, I was at the New Jersey Autism Conference in Atlantic City, and this mom came to the conference. She just got diagnosis 2 weeks before this conference, and she knew nothing about autism, really. And she knew, had no idea what was in store, and I spent a good 20 minutes talking to her, and by the time she left my booth, she had a whole new look, and she was like, you know, you really changed my perspective, because I just, I told her that it's not all doom and gloom.
Right.
I mean, there's going to be hard days. There's definitely going to be challenges in front of us, and we still deal with challenges every day.
But
our children are lovable, and they're loving towards us in their own individual ways. And you have to look for the good in everything, I think. And I think that's what you need to work on, and work with their capabilities, because they all have a special ability, and we need to tap into that ability, whatever it might be.
It also comes up the subject, and I'm not going to go that far into it, but autism is part of who they are. And I think some of these doctors think, and this is a whole nother subject, but you can cure autism, or you can take the autism out of the child, or whatever it is. I mean, autism is part of your child. I mean, it's not like it's a separate thing. And it's the way we look at it, Paul, too, the way the parent looks at it. Nobody loves living with autism, but we have to deal with it, and we have to cope with it. But it is part of their child. I mean, you can't separate it.
Yeah,
you can't separate it. That's part of who they are.
Well, I think what, you know, for us, Lynn, it's a little different when you have a child that's a little more on the severe side of the spectrum. It's a little different for us too.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of parents that have higher functioning children with autism, and obviously they've had their challenges, and we've talked about this. They had their challenges with certain issues, and maybe being very gullible, and you know, trying to make friends, don't know how to make friends, and maybe get made fun of or picked on, you know. So there's a whole different thing that goes on there.
Right.
You know, whereas our children, they're nonverbal, they're not talking to friends. You know, they have friends at school, but you know, they're not having a verbal conversation with them.
Right.
Or us, for that matter. So it's a little different. It's a little different for us.
I have two more to do. You want
sure.
me to go?
Yeah, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. This is kind of going along with what we just said. One woman said to me, I just took the advice from the doctors that said how we can help my child go as far as she can go. So that was a nice thing to say. I have this woman who I'm actually pretty close with, Susan Souza. Yes, Austin would never say mommy, never say I love you, never be able to attend normal school. Ha, ha, ha. You waste all that money on medical school for what? Well, he talks and talks nonstop. He does math, he reads, he writes, and he talks in sentences. He holds a normal conversation, can make his own toast, get his cereal, and pour his own milk. He can fry an egg with my help and dress himself. Ties his shoes and walks and talks at the same time. Does he have behaviors? Does he have meltdowns and hit himself? Sure. But he does everything that the doctor said he wouldn't. His teachers and families never gave up on him. So that take that little man in a white coat.
Yeah, good for her. You know what? Sometimes, you know, they deserve it. They do. I mean, I'm not saying they all are bad. And like I said, there are some very good physicians that work in the autism field and do have, you know, they do care and they show, you know, a lot of care for their child and for the parents. But there are a lot that just have zero bedside manner. And it pertains to even certain like diseases. You know, I remember my grandmother getting diagnosed and they told her she had 6 months to live. Well, she lived 5 years later, right. You know, like, so, you know, someone bringing you that news, you know, there's only, if you do believe in God, you know, there's only one person that knows the future, you know, and if you believe in that, and that's basically it. I mean, there, you don't know. That's why you never put a label on everything, on anything, you know, never put that label on your child that he's never going to be able to do this, because you know what, they're going to surprise you. And when you start to believe in your child, then they believe too, and then they're capable of doing way, way more. Because it's like anybody, if you have someone in your life that believes in you, that makes such a huge difference.
It is.
Because actually, I think that's the key.
My parents, I had said it at my father's party because I had to make a toast. And I remember my father saying to me about Michael, he said, you never, ever give up on a child. My parents were both teachers. So being that they were teachers, they had dealt with, you know, learning disabilities and different issues like that. And he said, a child is constantly developing, no matter how severe. And I've spoken with people who have older, severe kids, and they say they're still developing. You never give up, no matter how old they are.
Absolutely.
You just can't give up on someone who's your child. And if you have that philosophy, and you, like you said, and I think that our kids know that we believe in them, so they want to. They want to progress, and they try as hard as they can. So you have to give them credit for that, you know.
Absolutely.
I had one more person.
Sure, real quick.
I had two more. My son is a twin, and I was told to institutionalize him at the time of diagnosis, and he's never be a functioning member of society. Oh, how wrong they are. My son was diagnosed at the end of 2001. They were so negative back then, it was devastating. I wouldn't even read a book written before 1990. Later, I changed that to 2000, and now I don't read them at all.
Oh,
geez. I was told my daughter would never progress in speech, to put her in a home, as her behavior is so bad at times, and now she's speaking. So that was the end of that. But I did get a lot of responses, and thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you,
everybody. That was a great, great topic, and I think it needed to be heard.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and that's what we want to do here, is give everyone in the autism community an opportunity to voice their opinions and their experiences and share their stories of hope with us here on the program. And so, you know, thank you, Lynn, for doing that for us here at Autism Radio and putting that out there this week. And, you know, we look forward to next week's hot topic about Halloween. And we'll take it from there. So thanks again.
Okay, thank you, Paul.
So we'd like to thank our listeners, as always, for the continued support here on the program on Hope Saves the Day. And remember, don't forget our toll-free number at 1-877-HOPE-777. And also go, if you have any questions, email us at questions@autismradio.org. And also visit our event section, as we do have an event coming up on October the 28th. We have the famous Rupert Isaacson coming to New Jersey. So you'll have a rare opportunity to watch Rupert perform and teach us the horse boy therapy. But not only that, have a chance to meet him as well and possibly get your book or your DVD autographed by him himself. So we look forward to that, and we'd like to thank everyone. And remember, until next time, everyone, hope saves the day. Have a great week, everyone.
Every time I see your smile, I wonder what you feel. Every time you laugh or cry, I wonder if it's real. You seem trapped inside. Please help me understand, what is your world like? I want to feel your love. I want to know what it's like to laugh and play. Imagine a thought that you cannot feel, a tear trapped inside. Imagine a sound that you cannot make, no matter how hard you try. I want you to know how I'm feeling. I want you to know how it feels to be me. I wish you could look into my world and see how I see. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to song. Be my voice and remember hope saves the day. Show you what I see, what kind of life will I have, what's in store for me. Don't be afraid, just love and hold me. I can be all that I can be. With your love I can do anything. With your love I can see the world like rays of light shine upon me, inside of me.